Hello, I'm David Kokel, Head of the U.S. Compensation Research Team at ISS. Welcome to the June installment of the ISS Proxy Bulletin podcast series for the Americas region. We will provide a recap of the executive compensation trends and highlights that we have seen for the U.S. and Canadian proxy seasons, which are just starting to wind down. Joining me to talk about interesting trends, surprises, and takeaways are Rachel Hedrick and Kevin Marvaski, compensation analysts for the U.S. market, and Rashima Kathuria, compensation analyst for the Canadian market. Let's begin in the U.S. Kevin, can you share any interesting trends the team has seen in U.S. compensation this proxy season?
Among large-cap S&P 500 U.S. companies, we have seen just four failures on say-on-pay resolutions at meetings prior to the Memorial Day weekend. Another 18 companies received less than 70% support. Across the entire Russell 3000 index, the failure rate is roughly aligned with past years at just over 2%. In a troubling trend, though, several of the low vote results came at companies that paid severance to existing executives upon their apparent voluntary separations. In fact, throughout the 2019 proxy season, we saw multiple companies pay sizable cash severance to former executives who appeared to have voluntarily retired or resigned from their positions. While investors understand the need for severance to provide protection for executives against involuntary job loss, investors generally did not view severance as appropriate when paid upon a voluntary termination, such as retirement. We saw these payments by both large cap firms and smaller companies, indicating that the practice appears to cut across different indices. In some cases, the payments were consistent with what the executives would have received upon a termination without cause. However, in other circumstances, the payments rather substantially exceeded what the individual would have received upon an involuntary termination.
That trend does sound troubling. What motivations might companies have for doing this, Kevin?
The problem appears to stem in part from companies wanting to allow executives who would otherwise face involuntary terminations to make more graceful exits. This sugarcoating strategy allows the company to publicly state that the executive resigned or retired rather than he or she was let go by the company. Unfortunately, such face-saving gestures do not help investors who want to determine whether such payments are appropriate. Without disclosure regarding the specific type of termination and resulting severance that was triggered under an employment agreement or severance program, it's very difficult for investors to assess these payments. One example of problematic severance upon retirement occurred at Pioneer Natural Resources Company. In recognition of the former CEO, Doug, his long service to company, he was paid cash severance upon his voluntary retirement. Doug received a cash severance payment of $3.7 million, despite the company's prior proxy disclosure indicating he was not entitled to receive cash severance upon his retirement. This example highlights the potential confusion to investors when disclosure is not clear regarding this type of termination.
Okay, moving to Canada. Rashima, did we see any similar voting or termination pay trends?
With respect to voting issues, say-on-pay proposals continue to show up more on ballots. So far this season, 194 companies have held such votes. That's up from 176 in 2018 over a similar time period. Based on the voting results that we have in hand thus far, only one company, Cardinal Energy Limited, failed to pass its say-on-pay resolution with a razor-close margin of 49.8%. All other say-on-pay proposals received majority votes in favor of the compensation practice, with only four companies receiving support of less than 70%. Regarding severance and payments associated with executive departures, we did notice more CEO transitions that led to severance payments, special one-time awards, and make-whole payments along similar lines to the practices Kevin noted for the U.S. market. This CEO changeover trend resulted in many multi-million dollar severance payments, but most of these were in accordance with the CEO's employment agreements and therefore did not trigger against recommendations for Canada. In terms of the special awards received by the incoming CEOs, the awards varied from hiring cash bonuses to performance-based equity with long-term vesting periods.
Okay, and speaking of sizable pay opportunities, during the 2018 U.S. proxy season, we saw a significant increase in the number of so-called mega grants, these grants that provide exceptionally large pay opportunities and are often tied to moonshot goals. Did this trend continue in 2019, Kevin?
In 2018, we noticed a big jump in the number of unusually large equity awards, with more than a dozen mega grant pay opportunities identified during proxy season. Some of these awards, as seen at Tesla and Axon Enterprise, for example, sought shareholder approval for the awards prior to granting the shares. In last year's proxy season review, we predicted that more companies might adopt non-standard compensation program designs, such as the mega grant seen last year, especially given the repeal of the performance-based pay exception for tax deductibility under 162M. In fact, with the 2019 proxy season nearly complete, we've seen fewer mega grants as compared to 2018. As mentioned in a previous Bulletin podcast, one mega grant that we did see this year was at Discovery, where CEO David Zaslav received a special equity award valued at $115 million. In addition, at Palo Alto Networks, we saw incoming CEO Nikesh Arora receive sign-on equity awards totaling over $100 million. It's unclear if fewer mega grants this year are connected to uncertain outlook in the financial markets or political landscape, but we will continue to keep an eye on mega grant pay opportunities.
And I'm sure investors will certainly be glad to hear that the mega grant trend hasn't really picked up pace so far in 2019. All right, shifting gears, going back to Canada, Rashima, what were the other compensation takeaways from the Canadian market for 2019?
So this one is not a highlight, but it's more of a cautionary note. A wave of reverse takeovers of Canadian companies by US-based cannabis industry continues to crest. ISS has covered roughly 200 of these transactions in the latter half of 2018 and to date in 2019. Using a similar listing and corporate structure pattern, the resulting publicly traded entities have dual class share structures wherein US insiders maintain majority voting control through holdings of multiple vote shares. These companies are generally incorporated or perhaps reincorporated under the British Columbia Business Corporations Act, which provides issuers with more flexibility regarding capital structure and certain corporate governance practices. They are all listed upon completion of the reverse takeover on the Canadian Securities Exchange, which prior to 2018 was a low-profile competitor to the Toronto Stock Exchange. Worth noting for purposes of our discussion today is that the Canadian Securities Exchange, or the CSE, does not impose the same requirements as the TSX on reporting issuers in certain areas, such as security-based compensation arrangements. One positive difference is that the CSE does not permit stock option repricing. A negative difference is that the CSE, unlike the TSX, does not have any shareholder reconfirmation requirement for rolling or evergreen equity plans. In this respect, these plans are truly evergreen. As part of our annual policy review, ISS will be considering the adoption of separate voting policies for CSE-listed issuers, giving these differences in exchange requirements, which will, among other things, set out minimum best practice expectations for equity compensation plans.
Interesting, Rashima. Thank you. Rachel? Are there any equity plan related issues in the US market to speak of?
Sure. So we had a similar evergreen related concern in the US going into the 2019 season as a result of the previously mentioned repeal of the Section 162M tax code provision. So previously under Section 162M, companies were required to seek the approval of their equity based pay plans at least every 5 years, even if the company was not requesting shares or otherwise amending their plan. However, with the repeal of this provision, equity plans will no longer need to get periodic approval from shareholders to receive tax qualification. So this means that plans with evergreen provisions, those that automatically replenish the plan reserves, no longer need to be regularly reapproved by investors at all. And in fact, we may only see votes taken on these plans every 10 years, which is just in order to comply with the relevant stock exchange listing requirements. But while there have been concerns regarding the potential for companies to add back such evergreen provisions to their plan or add them for the first time to avoid investor review, this problem has not widely materialized in the U.S. market. In fact, in one high-profile case, the equity plan that's up for approval at Tesla's annual meeting next week on June 11th, the company actually removed the evergreen feature from their new plan. That being said, we will continue to monitor for the addition of such provisions as they can significantly increase the overall plan cost to shareholders. Also, in a post-162M world, the implementation of a new evergreen provision could even go so far as to remove such plan from getting regular investor review.
Okay, certainly something to keep a close eye on. Moving on from management proposals, let's talk a little bit about shareholder proposals. What types of shareholder proposals did we see presented in Canada this year, Rashima?
So definitely 2019 witnessed an increase in the number of compensation-related shareholder proposals submitted as compared to 2018. Most of these proposals were related to the disclosure of so-called pay ratio data, which would enable shareholders to see if the compensation of CEOs is out of line with their lower level employees. These pay ratio proposals received an average support of 6%. Another interesting topic focused on incorporating environmental, social, and governance metrics in the evaluation process for senior managers' performance-based compensation. Some of these ESG proposals received over 20% support with an average result of 17%. In addition, in line with prior years, some shareholders continue to ask big composite index companies to put advisory say on pay resolutions on their ballot.
Thanks, Rashima. In the US, we already have mandated disclosure of the CEO pay ratio, which is the ratio between the CEO's compensation and that of the median employee. Let me ask you, Rachel, are we seeing U.S. investors trying to get additional pay disparity disclosure in other ways?
Right. So most companies in the U.S. now provide the mandated disclosure regarding the ratio between CEO pay and the median employee that you're describing. And in fact, for most companies, or many companies, we have this data for 2 years. However, some investors remain interested in analyzing pay disparity through other avenues. We've seen a handful of shareholder proposals in the past 2 years that request companies consider the pay grades or salary ranges for other company employees when they're setting executive compensation. So this is not necessarily requesting that the company report another ratio, but requesting the company qualitatively describe how the compensation committee considers pay levels of other employees when setting executive pay. Another type of proposal requests that companies prepare reports compare compensation packages for executives to those provided to the lowest paid company employee. And these proposals also ask the company to consider whether there should be a ceiling on executive pay and whether compensation for executives should be adjusted when the company needs to do layoffs. As with the pay ratio proposals in Canada, each of these types of proposals has received relatively low support, with an average support level of just 7% in the US in 2019.
Are we seeing any other interesting compensation-related shareholder proposals in the U.S. market outside of the executive pay disparity items?
Several large pharmaceutical companies in the U.S. market have received proposals that request reports on integrating the risks related to drug pricing into the company's executive compensation program. So more specifically, the proponents ask companies to disclose on an annual basis how any risks associated with their drug pricing strategies are integrated into their compensation policies and any other arrangements they have with executives. These proposals have received stronger support than the pay disparity proposals I was describing earlier, with support levels of between 20 and 30% of votes cast.
Perhaps not a big surprise there, given the growing investor focus on ESG issues in shareholder proposals in recent years. Rachel, are we continuing to see any other proposals that seek to link environmental or social factors to executive compensation plans?
We are. So we've seen approximately the same number of these proposals in 2019 as we did during last year's proxy season, including this year several repeats at the same companies. The most common of these proposals requests that the board assess the feasibility of including either a sustainability or social metric in the executive compensation program, which gives the board some flexibility on metric selection. However, we've also seen a couple of proposals which are more specific, and those are asking the board to consider including a cybersecurity or data privacy metric. Interestingly, in 2019, the proposals are receiving stronger support than they did last year, with an average support level of just under 19% compared to 12% in 2018.
All right, well, we have covered a lot of interesting compensation items for the US and Canada markets. But before we wrap up today's discussion, is there anything you'd like to share about your 2019 proxy season that struck you as either unusual or perhaps noteworthy? Let's start with Canada.
There was one small cap TSX company, Yangara Resources Limited, that caught our eye in Canada with respect to their problematic compensation program for both executives and non-employee directors. A vote withhold was warranted for the compensation committee chair for serious concerns related to the lack of disclosure regarding pay decisions, which included unacceptably large stock option grants that comprised major portion of non-employee director compensation and the permissibility of directors and executives to hedge their share-based compensation against any future decrease in share price. In Canada, especially pertaining to non-employee directors, we've seen more inclination towards stock awards such as deferred share units rather than stock options. In fact, in recent proxy seasons, we've also observed an increasing number of small cap and venture issuers adopting full value award plans to enable grants of DSUs or RSUs to non-employee directors instead of stock options. This company, on the other hand, granted large amounts in the form of stock options without disclosing the rationale. Large grants of stock options as a form of non-employee director compensation are not viewed as best practice in the Canadian market and may serve to align directors' interests with those of management rather than shareholders. In addition, directors and executives are also allowed were not prohibited from hedging against any potential decrease in share value. Overall, this resulted in an unacceptable pay structure for non-employee directors. In terms of the voting results, the compensation committee chair received a fairly low support of 72%, while all other directors of the company received more than 95% support.
Noteworthy indeed. What about the U.S., Rachel? Anything unusual happened this season?
So in the U.S. market, there was one company, Sandridge Energy, where the board recommended that shareholders abstain from voting on the management say-on-pay proposal, which we believe to be the first time this has ever happened outside of a contested meeting. So the company was the subject of a proxy contest in 2018, and the board has substantially turned over since last year's annual shareholder meeting. So in the 2019 proxy, the board stated that they did not believe that fiscal 2018 compensation was reflective of the company's forward-looking compensation philosophy. And so the board recommended investors abstain from voting on the 2019 proposal and rather reconsider executive compensation next year at the 2020 meeting. A sizable portion of votes cast appeared to follow the recommendation, with 42% of shares abstaining on the proposal and just 39% of votes actively cast against. Regardless, the proposal still failed to receive majority support with less than 20% of the votes cast in favor. So it'll be interesting to see the company's response next year.
Okay, well, we have reached the conclusion of our US and Canada proxy season compensation recap. We would like to thank Rachel, Kevin, and Rashima for their contributions. And I would also like to thank our listeners for tuning in. I hope you have enjoyed this latest installment of our ISS Proxy Bulletin podcast series. Please watch your email for info on our next installment and send any feedback or questions you may have to bulletin@issgovernance.com. Thank you and goodbye for now.